Good morning. I'd like to thank everybody for coming. This morning's shiur is different than our normal structure of a halacha shiur. Last year we started giving shiurim on top halachic personalities in addition to topics. And last year we covered Rav Henkin, Rav Shmuel Vosner from Bnei Brak, Siddish Court, and Rav Avi Yosef. This year we started with Rav Scheinberg, and this, I guess, is the fifth installment of Rav Nissen Karelitz. Now, I think probably Rav Nissen is not so well known, such a name. And there's good reason. He was a quiet person. He wasn't a Rosh Yeshiva. He had a bezin in Bnei Brak. You know, not everybody ends up in court, definitely not in court in Bnei Brak. So many people didn't know of him. But he was somebody, by the time that he was Nifter, was well known, certainly in Eretz Yisrael, here in America too. He had one of the biggest levayas in the history of Bnei Brak. He was someone that was categorized as the Gadol HaDor in practical psak halacha. Bezdin's courts very much relied on his psak. And he was, though a quiet, seemingly unassuming person, growing up and living in Bnei Brak, but his influence was felt throughout the world. And before we go into a few different halachic aspects of his life, I think there are three particular points which define him, which are special to him as a posek. And I'm going to go through each area in detail, just to list them off. The first area was his development and setting up of what I would call the prototype of a Beis Din. He set up in Bnei Brak, a lot to learn from that. A second area is he was somebody that kept the psak of the Chazon Ish, and really Bnei Brak today stands as a city that keeps the psak of the Chazon Ish, even though the Chazon Ish was nifter 50 years ago. And thirdly, another area which he had expertise was the area of shimush, of giving practical training to Rabbanim and Dayanim. He had a very big role in that in Bnei Brak, in Eretz Yisrael, and even in America. Before we begin these areas, I think we should touch on a little bit of a biography. Who was this Rav Nissen Karelitz? So he was born in Europe circa 1926. The two illustrious parents. His father was Rav Nochum Meir, who was a big Talmud Chacham. Fact, his father became Rav in the city right close to Vilna. He was appointed to that position by none other than the great Rav of Vilna, Chaim Ozer Grudinsky. Where did he come? Such a great Talmud Chacham, appointed to such a position. Well, he was a great Talmud of multiple yeshivas. Amongst them, the Radin Yeshiva by the Chavetz Chaim, as well as the Slobodka Yeshiva by the Alter of Slobodka. What I actually found fascinating, Rav Nissen Karelitz, they have a lot of svarim that were published in his lifetime, entitled, I'll soon explain why, Chut Shani, the Red Thread. inside these svarim, besides fascinating psakim for Unis and Karelitz, one of these in the backs of one of these svarim, I found the shmuz of the Altar Slabatka, which you can't find anywhere else. It was a father, is a shmuz that his father had notes from, and Unisim decided to publish it in one of his svarim. There are multiple interactions with the Chavetz Chaim. Also, his father had, being the fact he was a Talmud of Radin. So his father was a great, great Talmud Chacham, a great Rav. His mother also had pretty good yichus, being the fact that she was a sister of the Chazonish. Play out the family tree. That means she also was a sister to the Stipler Gaon's wife, Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky's wife. It also means he was first cousins with Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Not bad. Pretty interesting yichus. He was actually named, he was known as Nissim. That was the name that he was most associated with. But he really had three names. Shmaryahu Yosef Nissim. Shmaryahu Yosef, one who's familiar, that's the name of the Chazanish's father. The Chazanish's father, original, was Shmaryahu Yosef. So Rav Nissim Karelitz was named after his maternal grandfather. Those who don't know, Rav Chaim Kanievsky's name is also Shmaryahu Yosef. In fact, some of his svarim is Siach, Shin Yud Ches. Shmaryahu Yosef Chaim was a name that was added. So Rav Nissim Karelitz and his first cousin, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, really share being named after the same person. What's pshat with the name Nissim? In fact, it's a very strange name for an Ashkenazi, for a Litvisha person to be named. And many Sephardim, Israelis, have the name Nissim. It's not too common you'd find in the Ashkenazic world someone to be named Nissim. And it was based, I did not track down the exact details. It's not found in any biography written up. But it seems when he was born, there are tremendous, tremendous complications. And his life was in danger as at the time of birth. So it was decided to add the name, name him after his grandfather, Shmaryahu Yosef, but to add the name Nissim appropriately because he was brought into this world of Nissim. And I saw somebody writing a tribute to him, said after all that he accomplished, it really, that name lived with him his whole life. It really was Maisa Nissim, what he was able to accomplish. He grew up, his family moved to Eretz Yisrael as he was a youngster. He went to yeshivas, old yeshiv in Eretz Yisrael, yeshiva Tiferes Tzion, Lumja yeshiva. But probably one of the turning points in his life was when the family moved to Bnei Brak, and there he had tremendous kesher and a shaychus to his uncle, the Chazanish. He lived in the house, he stayed by the Chazanish, spent a lot of time discussing halacha with the Chazanish, and the Chazanish had a tremendous impact on this young Talmud Chacham. In fact, he was very involved with his shidduch. He married, I believe, a granddaughter of Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. They say the first week after his prospective father-in-law met him, he commented to the Chazon Ish that his bacher is very quiet. Very, very quiet. It's a very few words. Like any good father-in-law, you're a little nervous for your daughter. I was a good Talmud Chacham, but he's quiet. The Chazon Ish assured him, first he says, in the Karelitz family, we're known for being quiet. But he says, don't worry, the world's going to hear from him. It's a pretty good bracha. And Taka, actually the trait of being very quiet and being able to listen, we'll see, is a tremendous midah if you want to be a judge, if you want to be a dayan. You have to be able to hear people out. Some people are quick to always talk and always offer what they have to say. Especially Rav, the dayan, it helps for a lot of positions in life. The Rebbe needs it too. But you need to have the ability to listen to other people, to hear what they have to say, to hear out two sides. And that trait, if anything, was not a fault. It was a tremendous, tremendous milah. In 1967, he was asked by his other uncle, the Stipler Gaon, if he could start a Beis Din. That's what he did. He started the Beis Din in Bnei Brak. Beis Din Tzedek, the Bedatz of Bnei Brak. That institution, Kananahara, sprouted out multiple offshoots, and it was viewed in Eretz Yisrael as one of the top Beis Dins in the entire land. And the procedures and the processes, which we'll talk about, really spread all over. So besides being a Rav, he was a Rav of the area in Bnei Brak, but as a Dayan in the Beis Din, had tremendous, tremendous influence. And that's what he kept his life busy with, running the Beis Din, leading the Beis Din, for decades upon decades, over half a century. He was nifter just this past year, right after Simchas Torah. As we talked about, there was a huge revival in Bnei Brak. Many yeshivas are accustomed to have what they call a kafa shnios with music, especially for the chutz l'aretz people, but this year in Bnei Brak, they did not have it in deference to the Levaya of Nissen Karelitz. That's the background of his life. But now I'd like to go through those three areas that we talked about. The first of them being a prototype Beis Din. Now, Beis Dins are not simple. The Torah says, comes up in a couple of weeks, Parashas, Ve'el Mishpat Mashatasim Afneim. The Torah tells us quite clearly, Tasim Afneim, Velo, Lefnei, Ovdei Kochavim, supposed to put it in front of our courts and not in a secular court. There are circumstances where it is proper to go into secular court. Not going through all those halachas today. But it's an important halacha that one, in general, when there's a dispute, to take that dispute to a Beis Din. Now, Beis Din system is not a perfect system, just like many other things in Yiddishkeit. We don't claim to have perfection. We try to do things the best way possible, a pi halacha. Interesting factor, the courts in Eretz Yisrael are different than the courts in America. Specifically, courts that were run under the guise of Rav Nissen Karelitz. And in an interview, they were asked what perhaps are some of the differences between Israeli courts and American courts, American Beis Dins. One glaring difference, at least by the courts, again, by Rav Nissen, is Dayanim by Rav Nissen did not take any money for judging the case. In America, it's different. But by Rav Nissen, his bedatz, the judge is involved, or is 100% l'shma, did not take any money. Not even what you call schar batala, money for taking out what they're missing and doing when they're sitting on Beis Din, did not take any money from it. And this allowed him such a whole other layer of being above the fray, not involved in, to any degree, and that gave them tremendous, tremendous amount of authority. So much so, I even saw of a case of where a judge in one of Rav Nissen's Beis Dins was sued by one of the litigants in secular Israeli court. And he had to go and defend himself, this dayan. And this is Beis Din, if they had money on the side, they would be able to pay off to defend their dayan. At that point in time, the Beis Din didn't have any extra money, and this dayan had to pay out of his own pocket to defend himself for sitting on a court and judging l'shma. Obviously, a system like that is not so simply to be sustainable. But that is a system that was started by Rav Nissen Karelitz. He believed in it, and he was able, as a one man, force behind this quiet, unassuming person from Bnei Brak, built a Beis Din which had tremendous authority. First of the Mar Makomos, I put in the sheets, top left. It's one of the classic kolkores. You see plastered all over the walls in Eretz Yisrael. This one was published 10 years ago. Right, there actually are people that keep track of all these postings. They built Sfarim based on them. Quite interesting. So in this particular Pesak Din, which Rav Nissen is the first of the people to sign on appropriately, on top of it, they also have a Vosner, and on the bottom they put Rebbe Yoshev. But talks about, I'll read the Nusaf, sorry I shrunk it to get it on the page. It says, Banu Lechazik Bedek Abayis V'lachzer, we come to strengthen the basis of Beis Din, L'chazer, L'chazer, just coming to tell pretty basic things. Keep a nail or a curl, someone who goes to secular courts for a dispute between Jews is a very chomer isser in the Torah. For over isser zeh, Moshe. Well, what's interesting is they go through, what's included in going to secular courts? He says, look, also Tvor Barakos El Emnisin Lakach Heter Biksav Ybezin Kavu of a Choshev. You can't go to the secular court until you first have a Heter from a Beis Din. Look, if you bring it in front of Beis Din and they say the correct approach in this case would be to go to a secular court, you can do that, providing you have written approval of that. Fortunately, there are people that claim, Beis Din said we could go to the secular court. There's no, it's not true. Fake news. So the way to clear Geder, if you have a psak, handwritten psak from Beis Din, telling you to go to a secular court, fine. But then they add, what's included in going to secular court? He says, Bukhara kos ugamer kos avoda kiyotzebize. You have a business dispute. Workers' compensation. That's also could be adjudicated in a Beis Din. You have housing laws. That could go to the Beis Din. All types of, some city things, buildings, building codes. Yeah, I know the city is involved with building codes, but that's also Baba Basra, Niske Shchedim is also part of building codes. There's halach on that too. Just as I was starting, someone came to me with a good story. I have an uncle, my father-in-law's brother, is an immigration attorney. So my father-in-law remarked that he's lucky because the Torah doesn't really have immigration laws. So that you have to go to our coast. That you have to go to secular courts. No choice. But a lot of other areas, workers' compensation, wages, you own apartment buildings, evictions, niske shchenim, building infringements, permits, okay, the practical permit you're going to have to get from the city. But disputes with these things, okay, there's Dina de Malchusa that plays a role. But in general, we'll see. If I have time, I'll get to one of the stories at the end. A fascinating story that Rav Nissen has with building issues, which are quite frequent in Israel.
Someone didn't violate a law, they violated a secular law.
Right, so that's a different story. Right, if the violation was only vis-a-vis secular law, right, then other than taking the bezin, they'll judge Dina de Malchusa, that's a different story. Oh yeah, we're talking where somebody did violate, you know, niske shchenim, you know, there are halachas you could be violating. You know, it does get tricky, you know, sometimes when it isn't exactly a Torah violation. But yeah. There's a Bez Din in Lakewood, which is quite popular for business halacha. It's called Bez Din Meisharim. That Bez Din, you look on their letterhead, Bez Din Meisharim in big bold letters, under the guise of Rav Nissen Karelitz. How's this Bez Din in Lakewood under the guise of Rav Nissen Karelitz? Very simple. I have the older version of the letterhead. The people involved in the Bez Din, the Dayanim, would travel to Eretz Yisrael quite frequently and would meet with Rav Nissen. They would ask him their shilas, and he would give them shimush. He would give them training in these halachas. These halachas are very complicated halachas. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, here in America, choshen mishpat, halachas, are starting to become, quote-unquote, more popular. People realizing there are issues. Just a couple of years ago, we did that famous share on the Quicken Loans issue. Quicken Loans being owned by a Jew, and the loans, and ribbis. But people in the business world are becoming more familiar that there are a lot of shilas, and there are a lot of issues. And a lot of these choshen mishpat issues, here in America, we're behind the eight ball. People haven't been asking them. And Dayanim, Rabbanim, not necessarily are so well-versed, well-trained in these areas. Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, where it's a little different focus, so these shilas have been coming about, and Rav Nissen's Bez Din's been dealing with these for years. There's a story, Lagabi Gittin. There's a particular case in America that the husband was absolutely refusing to give his wife a get. In America, they tried absolutely everything to convince this husband to give the get, to no avail. They heard that Rav Nissen Karelitz, his bezin, is able to get gittin from almost all circumstances. Did he have a gun? Did he threaten people? What exactly did he do? Rav Elias Sveid Zatzal found out about this, and he sent a message, emissary to Rav Nissen, asking if he would take this case. He said, sure. They brought the couple to Eretz Yisrael. He met with them, and this simple yid listened to their case. After listening, asked a few piercing, clear questions. And within a few moments, no threats, no guns, the person was ready to give a get. This case, you know, opened the eyes in back in America. Wow, this Nissen Karelitz knows what he's doing. And he started getting flooded with more and more gittin to deal with. In fact, today, it seems his Bez Din has so many branches, so many areas, they have multiple branches, units, deal just with gittin. Some practical elements, I saw two interesting stories. I've never been to an actual Beis Din, Baruch Hashem. I guess never got into trouble. I've been to the principal's office, but I haven't been to Beis Din yet. But, you know, normally a Beis Din, you have, let's say, the three Dayanim sitting at a table, and you have the litigants on one table, you know, other ones on another table, the lawyers, the Tohanim, each one trying to state their case. So Reb Nissen tried always to calm the tensions and make things as amicable as possible. So I saw one particular situation. He saw it was getting a little hyped up. He asked for everyone to sit together on the same table. So he had the three Dayanim and the litigants all sitting around the same table. Let's talk out the case. Just that alone, he felt in that scenario, eased the tensions and worked it out. It's also quite common that when the litigants would state their case, they would state it facing their person that they're going up against. Reb Nissen stopped that practice. That was normally what went on in Beis Din. Reb Nissen made that the litigant, each side stating their case, had to only directly face the Dayanim and not look at the party that they're fighting against. Because he understood Kochas and Nefesh. He was a Talmud. His father was a Talmud of the Alter Slabotka. He understood when you say your case versus a person you're fighting against, you get enraged. Just looking at him, you know, there's a good reason the President of the United States is in front of the other people sitting behind him. If you had to give your speech looking at the face of your adversaries, it wouldn't be the same speech. Not at all.
Doesn't it also make it harder to throw a false accusation at someone if you're...
Yeah, yeah. It does make for a difference, perhaps. Good point. That it's harder in part of the Nabal Tova. Right? When you look at the guy's face, like, how could I lie to this guy's face? Which you're giving good pshat for the Havamina. That's why I believe originally the litigants did face each other. Because, yeah, let him say it to the person's face. But Reb Nissen understood that has a danger too. Let's calm it down. Look at me. And in fact, Reb Nissen took it a step further. Reb Nissen felt, this is how he guided Dayanim. He said, let the people talk. And hopefully we'll get Siyat Dishmaya, figure out what the right thing is. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it, when someone's lying, they usually get caught up in their lies. So one of the judges, potential judges, getting shimush by Reb Nissen, turned to him. He says, what happens if we can't tell by them telling over their case which side is lying? He's like, I guess it's your fault. You weren't zocha to Siyat Dishmaya in that. You gotta work harder next time. Just by you looking at him, you seeing him, you could figure out which side is telling the truth, which side is tripping up, and get them. So these Beis Dins, this prototype Beis Din that Reb Nissen built, mamish, over 50 years ago, still stands today as a tremendous model for Beis Dins all over the world. Second area, which Reb Nissen, I believe, excelled in, is keeping the psak of the Chazon Ish. Now let me explain. Psak halacha, what's the nature of psak halacha? Look, Baruch Hashem, Reb Yosef Kaira the Mechaber put together a Shulchan Aruch. The Rama added to that. And through the ages, you have the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch, you have Shal Shachuvos. And when a posek has to pask in the Shaila, he goes through from the Shulchan Aruch down, start from the Gemara, everywhere. He has lots of halachic precedents to look at in paskening the Shaila. But it does not mean that any posek views himself mishubed to necessarily go with the derech of an earlier generation. A person who's roi lahara, who's fit to be a rav, a posek, will judge it based on his das, but not necessarily is part of his vision. I'm looking to keep this paskin within this framework. A lot of people have pretty wide frameworks. I'll give you even the muscle. I heard this story multiple times from my Neiman Zetzal. Rav Moshe Feinstein, we all know, is posek adar here in America, throughout the world. Tremendous, tremendous posek. His son today, Rav David Feinstein, Shlita, is certainly one of the poskei adar. But it doesn't mean that Rav David Feinstein is pasking everything al pi his father's psak from Negros Moshe. He's his own man. And this is the way that Rav Moshe himself trained him. Rabbi Neiman tells over a story that someone once came into Rav Moshe's sukkah on Chol HaMoed and asked him the halachas, all the halachas about smoking. This is going back years and years ago before they knew Mustama the dangers of smoking. And spoke to him about, are you allowed to smoke? Gabi Yantif, Chol Nefesh. And Rav Moshe said, no, he felt it wasn't Shavu Chol Nefesh, can't do it. So David and Reuven were staying right next to Rav Moshe. And they said, but Tati, you know, we smoke. Again, it's going back years and years ago. They sure did. Right? And Rav Moshe said, look, I assumed you went through the halacha your own way, and you came out that it was okay. But Neiman said the story over, that Rav Moshe gave them license. Look, you're not meshubba to paskin exactly what I said. You go on your own path. And there are many poskim they could learn here and there, but end of the day, their psak is their own mind, their precedents they get from earlier generations, definitely from their rebbeim. But for the most part, you know, they're their own man. Rav Nissen Karelitz, to his credit, was very much a chazanish man. It's not saying that every single psak was exactly the way of the chazanish. I'm not sure. I don't know. But within the svarim you see, he spent a lot of time analyzing and saying over, explaining, understanding, defining the psakim of the Chazon Ish. And that's quite amazing. The city of Bnei Brak today is a city which functions and runs with the psak of the Chazon Ish. There are not, to be honest, I don't know if there's any other city, really definitely the scope of how big Bnei Brak is in the Jewish world, which the psak of the city, by and large, goes after one person's psak, the psak of the Chazon Ish. And look, there are contributing factors. The Kanievsky family are very into the psak of their uncle, Chaim's into the psak of the Chazon Ish. But in practically running a Beis Din, being the Rav, Rav Nissen Karelitz did it. He very much so was in the forefront of leading Bnei Brak with the psak of the Chazon Ish. Within one of the practical Shalz Alach, he talks about, he was asked, hey, do we consider the Chazon Ish Gemara da Asra? How far does it go? So as a general klal, he said, yeah, there are pratim you need to answer. I'm not giving a general answer to that. But he very much, at least in Bnei Brak, ran Bnei Brak with the Chazon Ish Psakim, one particular one, as many, many people in Bnei Brak would not use government-generated electricity. They all have generators. That is not necessarily what goes on in Yerushalayim or other places in Eretz Yisrael. And that's all pi the psak of the Chazon Ish. And Rav Nissen was very much involved with that. I saw an interesting shayla of a woman who was older and sick, or wasn't necessarily able to go with that psak, that chumrah. So he had delicate balance answering her shayla. Okay. I want to touch upon one particular psak, which the Chazon Ish paskened on, which Rav Nissen spent a lot of time explaining. Very fascinating psak. And this psak alone deserves its own share, so I'm not going to go through it fully. But it's the psak of the halacha of who is considered a tinek shenishba. Very, very important practical halacha today in Eretz Yisrael throughout the world. Is the halachas of being a Jew. A Jew does not mean your mother's Jewish in this context. A Jew means a shomer Torah mitzvos, but got to be many halachas. Right? Practical, machal Shabbos. Machal Shabbos to save the life of an observant Jew, a Torah Jew. Someone who's not machal Shabbos for. Many halachas guarding the rights of a Jew are applicable if you're shomer Torah mitzvos. Unfortunately, we live in a world today which there is a significant majority of Jews, both here in America, in Eretz Yisrael, all throughout the world, who are not shomer Torah mitzvos. What is our view towards them? So the Chazon Ish had a groundbreaking psak. The simple psak that he wrote, which is inside, it's in the middle of the first page here in the sheets. He talks about the concept of Tinek Shenishba that's written there in the first line. He writes, Tinek Shenishba, Mitzin Anu L'Hachyoso, Afachal of the Shabbos, Bishvah Tzolasa. We have to save him, we have to sustain him, Machal Shabbos for him. Quotes Hagos Maimini, Dein Rashayim Lesnoso, Chas Hashem, we're not allowed to hate them. He brings at the end of Sefer Avos Chesed from Chaim Volozhin's brother. The mitzvah of Eser Hashem Mihai Taima. And yeah, the Chazon Ish says these people, Jews who are uneducated, fall under this category. Major, major, major heter, you might use the word kula, that the Chazon Ish stated, which set up that all these people have the din of 100% Jews. They're Tinek Shenishmas. Firstly, I saw an interesting point from Nissen defends. People attack, like, the Chazon Ish made this up. Where's the halachic precedent for this psak of the Chazon Ish? Now, he quoted within this piece a little bit from Sefer Avos Chesed, from the Goz Maimony, but that's only on the classic case of a kid that actually was kidnapped. The church kidnapped the kid, and they raised him not Jewish. So a kid who was actually kidnapped, that's a Tinek Shenishba. But parents who never sent their kid to a Jewish school, does that have the same level of a Tinek Shenishba? Would we consider most of our society today Tinek Shenishbas? That, where's the precedent for that?
You didn't give anything up.
What do you mean?
Is it normally you could say that you were born a Jew, you gave up that right. They didn't give it up. They never didn't do anything different.
Okay, so it's a svara. But it's a strong svara. But where's the precedent? So Rav Nissen writes, right after that, there's no kasha the fact that Poskim didn't speak what the Chazon Ish said. It's as simple. It's much different. This phenomenon didn't exist in earlier generations to this degree, where you had so many people, Rahman al-Aslan, uneducated, not being shomer Torah mitzvos. It's unfortunately a matziv, which we'll talk about. You had in Russia, where they suppressed religion. You unfortunately have in America, where religion fell by the wayside. You have in the state of Israel, where unfortunately this went on. And all these people, Alpi the Psak of the Chazon Ish, have the din of a Tinuk Shenishma. If you look in the back of your sheets, there's a few other pieces, but if you look in the back, Reb Nissen qualifies all these dinim. He says, Yehudi shegadov nichsnach ben agayim, you have a Jew who's educated amongst the Goyim, v'lo yada midas Yisrael klal. Tina k'tina sh'nishma. He has a full din of a captured child. V'afim yada v'shama sh'yehudi v'sh'yeshim yehudim sh'ma'aminim sh'yesh bar yolam. Even in the case, it's not that he doesn't know Jews exist. He knows there are Haredim. He knows there are Orthodox Jews. He knows all that. V'kal makon kol zman sh'yehudim ma'amin b'zeh v'lzana k'yehudim sh'yehudim sh'yehudim Torah mitzvos. Look, he thinks I have a choice. I could be dati. I could be in a dati. There's a choice. Hareyu ka'anus. He has a din. This is against his will. He's coerced. Sharei einu yodei emes. V'alinu l'karv l'lamo. It's our obligation to be makarivim. It's our obligation to teach him. V'im abnam. V'im ishtadu imo kishir. V'pikivi is dayna yir. V'adayna omi b'mirdo. Okay, if you actually educate him and he knocks it off, okay, that's a different thing. That's rebellious. But most people, they never learned anything. The next oath he talks about, Jews who grew up in Russia, Shalim Dua Samitaris Yisrael, David Dinatina Shanishba, even if they know they're Jews and he knows there are other Jews. And in the next oath he says, not just people who grew up in Russia, Ela af baratzina kedosha bismanenu shiram ne'aminu mischakim kfira lichios chayi hefka v'holos. They live a life of no boundaries, of nothingness. V'chinchu b'das Moshe v'Yisrael. Nevertheless, they could be growing up in Jerusalem. Dinam k'tinak shenishpa. They have a din of tinak shenishpa. Avshim yodim shem yodim shiyishim yodim shom Torah mitzvos. So Reb Nissen is clearly going through. There's more halachas of this, but this is a major, major fundamental psak of the Chazon Ish, and Reb Nissen goes through it. That's so important. To he qualified this psak, he clarified this psak. And obviously, this is a psak, which is very, very important in our times. So, that I believe is another area of Reb Nissen's greatness. Not just did he establish this amazing Beis Din, which is a prototype all over the country, all over the world, but in keeping with the psak of the Chazon Ish, look, Reb Nissen was a great man. Sure, he had his own chidushim, but he didn't want to innovate. He just tried to be, for the most part, a conduit for continuing the Mesorah of the Piskei Chazon Ish. I think that area in particular, I think has a tremendous shaychus in the next area, the final area I'd like to talk about, his shimush, his training of Poskim. And to train Poskim is not an easy thing. What that really means is you have to be a Rebbe. You have to be Mechanach. And being Mechanach is not an easy job. Especially if you're a Posek, if you're a Rav. You know, there aren't too many Rabbanim that are also Mechanachim. Full-time Rabbanim, especially full-time Dayanim. It takes a certain art. We mentioned before, a certain patience. There's also a certain skill set and appreciation. I think the part of the secret of Reb Nissen's success was he spent his life being a Talmud of the Chazon Ish and keeping that idea of what it means to be a Talmud. someone who himself is a Talmud, that's a tremendous schus to have Talmidim. Rav Nissen had tremendous amount of Talmidim who he was able to teach, train, to be Rabbanim, to be Poskim. But part of that key, because he himself was a Talmud, never ceased being a Talmud of the Chazon Ish. One psak, I have it here on the sheets. He trained his Talmidim with was something that his father got training from the Chafetz Chaim. If you look, I found this in the back of one of the Svarim. Sipur Rabbeinu, Shebizman Melchemes HaOlam HaRishon, during World War I, Sheyeshivas HaKadoshim VaChafetz Chaim Halu BeGolus Rusya. At that point, the Chafetz Chaim, interesting, was in Russia. Nishach Aviv El Moron Chafetz Chaim Lishol Piv, Eza Sheila Beinin Kvuras Mesim Shleisa Tzulu B'Minok. Fortunately, his father was a Rav at some Shilos regarding Kvura. Vana Chafetz Chaim, Harei Ata Asad Lios Rav, L'chein Agil Lecha. The Chafetz Chaim told Rav Nissen's father, you're going to be a Rav. I have a special obligation to train you, teach it to you. The Chafetz Chaim was already, you answer a Shiloh, it's different if the person asking is a Rav. And he said, very basic, important klal. Shebechol sheila yesh livdok le'inyin man azenogeh. Anytime a person asks you a shayla, you can't just think in terms of iser v'heter. Most people, when they see a shayla, okay, what's halacha? Asur or mutter? Black or white? Zakt, the Chafetz Chaim, that's not how a Rav should look at a shayla. Well, you have to go as much deeper than that. You have to know the basics. What's a nogea? Kares, lav, iser deraisa, derabanan. Rak minog. The kana shayla hihecha minog. The shayla you're asking me is a shayla about a minog. Ech sheyasi yetov. So you know what the answer is? Either way you do it is fine. Those are the words of the Chafetz Chaim. Zok Rav Nissen explaining, Sha'av sheminog yisrael torahi. Even though minhagim are 100% Torah. Hainu davka kasha yish minog kavua. If you have a set minog, okay, that's the minog, we got to do it. But where it's a case of where there are different minhagim. Each river does their own thing. Etzleinu ein minog. Oshli yodea minog. By us, we don't know what the minog is, what to do. Azai keitza sha'arav kavua kachia minog. Whatever you choose for this case, obviously, being the fact it's only a minog, and especially if there's no set minog, there's room, wiggle room, to help out the person depending on the circumstance. If you know what to deal with, if it's deraisa, you're stuck. There's very little wiggle room. If it's derabanan, maybe, sometimes. If it's a minog, a little bit more. But that's how a Rav should look at a shayla. Amazing training that Rav Nissen's father got from the Chafetz Chaim, which Rav Nissen himself passed on to his Talmidim. A classic shayla comes up. Yeshiva Bacham asks us the shayla all the time. Let's say a person has a rav. This person's my rav. Is he also able to ask shaylas to other rabbanim? It's very frequent. You know, not necessarily is your normal rav, your normal posek, always available. Could I ask someone else? Bonafide posek, bonafide rav. I asked about the shayla. Very simple. So this is instructed people to teach 100% you could, with one caveat. Providing you know that this rav is not posking different than your normal rav of posking. Many times you have a shayla, so you go with the posik you're able to get to. Providing you know that this could be what your rav holds. I don't think there's even an obligation to go back to your rav next time you find him. And ask him, you know, hey, what about this shayla? Poor Rav, he's getting every one of your shaylas, even the ones you never asked him, and they're getting. But that you have to do. I saw an interesting shayla. Comes up a lot, Bali Tshuva. were just talking a moment ago about minhagim. A Baal Tshuva, say for simplicity's sake, this Baal Tshuva grew up, maybe he was a Chazanish, Tinuk Shenishba, didn't have a full Jewish education. Definitely his parents didn't provide it for them. And doesn't know anything about his parents, have no minhagim. What minhagim does this Baal Tshuva follow? So simply put, yeah, you follow your Rebbe's psakim, you follow your Rebbe's minhagim. But what about the fallen case? I've heard this, Shaila. Let's say you know, look, your grandfather, Baruch Hashem, was Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. A grandfather, even a great-grandfather, great-uncle, he was a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. Do I follow his minhagim? I came back to the fold. Can't go after my parents, they don't have minhagim. Like, I could trace back. I know my grandfather had minhagim, this one had minhagim. So in that, the lashon that Nissen uses, b'zeh shayich tzad shinog gemoso. There is a tzad that it could be known like him. Haguf, the fact that he calls it ksas, means there's wiggle room there too. If you kept the minhagim of your rav, of your posik, the way they taught it to you, a lot of times it's, you know, the best thing for Baal Tshuva is keep it simple. This is what he was taught by his Rebbe, wherever he was educated, that, well, he finds out he has this relative he's makusha with, that's his one from relative, and he has his minhagim. Yeah, there's a tzad to follow them, but it's not absolute achiyav as it would be one's parents who have a chain of a mesorah through generations. One other amazing shaila I came across, this is very relevant, it's on the back of your sheets. The shaila, the issue that was brought up was answering shaila over the telephone. It's a culture game today, the shaila would be brought up, we've got to be texting shailas. The rabbi app. Should a rav answer shailas over the phone? Tell you the honest truth, it's quite common. There are shaila hotlines. We once talked about a certain app for certain shailas. Yeah? So what could one, should one do it? Rav Nissen has a fascinating response. If you look in the back, he brings the Gemara Nida, where someone came to ask a shaila to Rava about doing a bris on Shabbos. So he said, yeah, sure. Basin Nafik, Amar Rava. Hey, wait, this guy asked me, can you do a bris on Shabbos? Ziyam Aretz, you didn't know the halacha that bris is Docha Shabbos? So Rava said, something's fishy. Rava went and went after the guy and asked him, tell me exactly what happened. And basically, the case was, the child wasn't born exactly on Shabbos. It went out of some weird birth, Ben Hashmash's case. So in that case, Rava says, no. The halacha is you're not machal Shabbos for that. And the bris could only be on Sunday. So Zok Reb Nissen from this random Gemara Nida, what do you see from there? The great Amora Rava almost messed up a shaila because he saw something was up, went after the person, he was missing a detail. And Rav himself almost paskened the wrong shaila. Dr. Nissen, you're talking to someone over the phone. You're not looking at the person. He's giving you a certain amount of details. But who says you're getting all the details? Dr. Nissen, it's a Rav's job, it's a Dayan's job to paskin to the best of his ability face to face. Not over the phone, definitely not by text. A Rav should be passing shailas face to face. Because there you get the clear details and be able to deal with the person's shaila. But to do it over the phone, he says, look, Malcolm Shehefsher, okay, you know what you got to do? If you have to pass on the phone, you better ask a lot of questions, get a lot of details. That also doesn't happen. How many times call up? Yes, no. You know, you hear the line dead before you've finished saying your question. Rav Nissen says, that's unacceptable. That's not what a Rav is supposed to do. To be able to hear out the Shaila is so important. Amazing training. Rav Nissen Kerlitz. I would like to end with three stories, which I think depict well Rav Nissen's tremendous pichas in being a dayan, being a judge. First story, he was dealing with a case of, talked about for construction in Eretz Yisrael. They were building one building on top of another. So somebody was timing, they're building too close to my house. And he took the other side to court. So Rav Nissen got the details of the case beforehand, prepared his dayanim, we'll get to in a second, and the litigants start their case. So the guy who's claiming says, this guy's too close to my house, I can't take it, it's right on top of me. So Nissen turns to him, he's like, if it'll be 10 meters away from your building, would that be okay?
That's pretty far.
Right? He's like, yeah. Yeah, I guess so. What about those 15? Yeah, it's better. What was those 20? Yeah, that 20 meters for sure. So Nissen turns to the other guy. Go on building. You won. And this is, I sent my dayanim there yesterday to measure the building. It was 45 meters away.
45 meters, wow.
He prepared the case ahead of time. Has dayanim go down to the site to see where it was, measure the distance, adjudicated in moments. Another story, Rav Nissen was the Rosh Kol of Kol HaChazanish. Dealt with many cases over there. The Beis Din was on the fifth floor. In later years, it was hard for Rav Nissen to walk up five flights of stairs. So they petitioned, they figured out that they'll build an elevator. But guess what happens? Bnei Brak's a tough city. The people in the building protested against Kol HaChazanish building an elevator because it will disturb them. The case was sent to Rav Nissen. And Rav Nissen ruled, Hezek Shenim, it's no problem. You can build it. They built the elevator. After the elevator was built, people saw that Rav Nissen was walking up the stairs. They came to him after a while. Rav Nissen, why are you going up the stairs? He's like, because I paskened on that case that you could build the elevator. The whole elevator was built for him. But he wouldn't walk up, go up in the elevator because it was in a case that bothered other people. The people found out about it. They felt like pretty bad. They caused it. They told him, Nissen, no, please, please, please. Only then would he go up in the elevator. And one final story shows tremendous pichas of Rav Nissen. Anytime you're involved in the Beis Din, even the dayanim not getting paid, and even you figure out all the chaps or where to sit them, it's still tough to accept the decision, especially when it goes against you. And there was one woman who a judgment was made against her, and she was a tough woman. She was irate. And she figured out that what she was going to do is she would go and pester the dayanim in the case one by one. One night, she goes and attacks, goes to the house of one dayan and screams at him. Next night, Rav Nissen's mazel, she got to him on a Friday night, comes knocking on his door, Rabbi, I want to speak to you about that psak. Rav Nissen says, I'll hear you out, but first you have to have Kiddush and have Suda with me. They invite this woman to their Shabbos table, sits by the Shabbos table. By the end of the evening, she says, I'm fine, I don't need to talk about the din. The family turns from this and like, this woman was known for being a tough woman. And this is said, I saw that she was hungry. The pichos of an Adam Gadol, quiet, unassuming man from Bnei Brak, simple man, solve many problems in the Jewish world. Baruch Hashem, his memory should be a schus for all of us, and we should all have a wonderful, wonderful week.